What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Red Blacks Unfiltered. This is the podcast where you can hear candid conversations with your favorite Red Blacks players. I'm your host, Jacob Kelly. And before we get into today's conversation with Ettore Latanzio, there's a couple things that we need to go over first. Number one, if you enjoyed today's podcast, please consider leaving a rating and a review. The more positive ratings and reviews you get, the more it helps new people find this show. And on top of that, if you are new to the podcast, make sure you subscribe and stay tuned for future episodes. We put up brand new interviews every single Monday at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and now I present to you Ettore Latanzio Unfiltered. Ettore Latanzio, welcome to Red Blacks Unfiltered. How are you doing today?
Not too bad, my friend. I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Thanks for asking. So I want to start today's podcast. I want to go all the way back to the beginning. Can you talk to me about growing up in Ottawa and starting to play football?
Yeah, sure. All right. Well, growing up in Ottawa, I mean, I love Ottawa, so it's always been home for me. So I started playing ball when I was, I believe, 12 years old, grade six. And I stuck to the Nepean area. I played for the Redskins, which are now, I believe, the Eagles. So anyhow, I started my football career there, played for a few years with them, then went into varsity with the OVFL and played for the Myers Riders, which I believe now is no longer a league. So I feel like an old guy because either my team's name's changed or the league I used to play in doesn't exist anymore. But nonetheless, so that's where I played varsity ball. And then from there, I ended up doing one season in junior football in the Quebec League. And then from there, I got picked up by U Ottawa and stuck it out there.
And so when you were 12 years old in grade six, why did you decide to play football? What was it about it that made you want to play?
Honestly, it's funny. I'm one of those weird guys that happens to play a sport professionally, but in a lot of ways is not really... I'm not a sports guy. I grew up in a family that my dad was into like weightlifting, boxing, martial arts, stuff like that. But I didn't grow up in a family that was, you know, had any affinity with hockey or soccer or whatever. So I wasn't a sport person, but obviously like every good Italian boy, you got to start playing soccer as a kid. That's just kind of the rite of passage. So I started with soccer early on. But it wasn't really for me. I was a little bit bigger, a little bit clumsy for the sport. Just wasn't really my style. And we had a couple neighbors that kept on telling my parents, put him into football, he'd be great, et cetera, et cetera. And then finally I was put in. And my first year was obviously a little bit rough because there was a learning curve. But after that, it was I don't want to say smooth sailing, but I got the hang of it pretty quick. And it's been great ever since.
And did you do any martial arts or boxing or anything like that growing up?
Yeah, so I did. This is one of my, if I have any regrets, I'd say I regret that I didn't stick it out a little longer in martial arts. But I did do a little bit early on, but it just wasn't for me at the time. I just, you know, when I was a kid, I was like maybe four or five. I just wasn't something I found super interesting at the time. So I ended up not continuing with it, which I wish I did. Boxing, yeah, I've always played around with it. I mean, I by no means consider myself a boxer. I've got everything at home because my dad did like to dabble in it. I have a punching bag, like a heavy bag. I've got speed bag, timing bag. I've got pretty much full setup at the house there. So it's something I can use if I really wanted to, just even for conditioning purposes. But no, I gravitated towards football. It worked out for me. And I did play, or I should say I did wrestle a bit in high school. That was also a sport that I enjoyed and I was pretty good at. But outside of football, that was my main thing that I kind of stuck to.
Got you. And you said when you started, there's a bit of a learning curve. Did you start playing D-line right away? I know there was a point, I think you played running back at one point, but did you start playing D-line when you first signed up?
Yeah, so I basically went in there. So the way it works is when you're a kid, right, like, coaches don't really know how big you're going to be, especially when you're 11 or 12 or even younger. So at that time, I was a bigger kid for my age group, and I actually had to play up an age group. So instead of starting in Mosquito, I had to play in Pee Wee. And so most of the guys I played with at that point were like a year or two older, but I was their size or bigger. But, you know, I never really grew more. Like, I grew, obviously, I got larger from the age of 12 to, say, 16, 17 or whatever, but I didn't get to that 6'3", 6'4 defensive line frame that you would normally see. And so, but because I was just, I ended up being very good at it, and I was always stronger for my size, coaches never really moved me around too much. I can only remember one year where I was moved around a bit to different positions. A lot of that, though, had to do, I think that it was more political than anything else. So it didn't last. And then after that, I just stuck it out till I got drafted. And it was only when I got drafted to Winnipeg that I was moved again to the offensive side of the ball, which, you know, I thought it was a bit of a head scratcher, but when you don't fit the mold, people try and put you where they think you're going to fit instead of just kind of giving you that opportunity. So thankfully, Ottawa believed in me and they gave me that opportunity. And so far it's worked out.
And was like not fitting the mold of your typical defensive lineman being considered quote unquote undersized. Is that something you had to deal with, not even at the professional ranks, but pretty much your entire football career, even from high school playing junior ball before college and everything?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny too, because when I talked to a lot of my friends, especially high school friends, not so much football players, but just friends that I didn't have anything to do with football. When I tell them that I'm undersized, they kind of look at me like, you know, cross-eyed, because I was always the bigger, stronger kid in school. It was just, it doesn't compute with people like that who see me as a certain way. But when I tell them, well, if you put me, you know, in the context of football, most of these guys that I'm going against, you know, probably have 30, 40 pounds on me, 3 or 4 inches on me, you know, so, and then guys that play my position are, you know, usually 20 or more pounds heavier, you know, 2 to 3 inches taller. So when I start kind of giving them that perspective, they're like, oh, okay, I guess it makes sense that you would technically be considered undersized. But it didn't really become a thing until probably, I would say, later in my university career, because at that point I was, you know, year three, year four, was considering, you know, the pro avenue. And it was at that point where scouts would talk to me and say, you know, you could be a fullback or et cetera, or special teams. And it wasn't that I have anything against special teams per se, but I think every athlete knows their strengths and their weaknesses. And a lot of people are surprised when I tell them that I weigh 270 pounds and sometimes more. And they're, because I don't look at it, I hold my weight pretty well. And so to have a guy my size running down at that weight, every, you know, kickoffs and everything over and over and over, I'll burn out before anyone else does who's, you know, 230, 6'2", 6'3", you know what I mean? It's just, I know what my body type is, and I've always been a very stout player, quick get off, et cetera. And I knew that playing as a defensive tackle was probably going to suit me better going forward. Because had I said, okay, I won't play D tackle, maybe I'll switch to defensive end but focus on special teams, I'd have to completely change my entire physical makeup. I'd probably have to lose 30 pounds and, you know, just to make myself more agile and able to, you know, keep up with a lot of these guys, you know, speed wise. It's something I've had to deal with obviously a lot, but it's been more so, I would say, as a professional than anything else.
Okay. And so when you mentioned that you went over to Quebec to play junior ball, was that when you were 18 or was that like your final year of high school heading into being 18 and starting college?
Yeah. So I was 18. I actually wasn't even going to play that year. I kind of had it in my head that I was going to not play fall football, because the way the Quebec League works is you play during the fall like you would in Nakafa City football. And then summer ball tended to be the varsity, so like OVFL and whatever other league they have now. So at that point in time, I was finishing my last year of high school, and it wasn't something I wanted to do. But I ended up going to a practice. A former coach of mine had said, come check out a practice. And at this point, they'd already played, I think, 3 or 4 games. And by the end of the practice, he's just like, all right, so we'll see you next week. And I was like, I guess so. And it just kind of happened. I ended up playing the rest of the year, and we actually ended up going to the championship but losing, which sucked. But it was a great experience. It was a really fun time, great team. And then at that point, I ended up playing a season of OVFL And then 2 weeks after the season ended, when we lost that in the playoffs, I had to go right into training camp at U Ottawa. So that was a bit of a rude awakening. So physically, I was not ready for a training camp. That's for sure.
I should say, when did you start speaking to U Ottawa? Like, when did it become clear that you were going to start playing football at the next level? Like, at what point in high school did that become a reality?
I was definitely already thinking of that come probably grade 10, where I was really starting to consider my options. And obviously, I was looking to go down south if I could. Back when I was in high school, which wasn't that long ago, but it was around 10 years old now, the opportunity to get down south was like the various camps and avenues that kids are taking now weren't really available for myself and a lot of my peers. A lot of the guys I know that ended up going down south, they either knew some people or they did a lot of camps down south. They went to a lot of different camps and it worked out that they were able to sign. And a lot of them also took the junior college route. But I unfortunately never worked out for me because you're talking about the States, right? They're not going to look at some 6 foot, whatever, 230, 40 pound defensive lineman, right? It's just not a thing. So had I played linebacker, I might have had a little bit better opportunity, but it's hard to say. So U Ottawa for me was, I would say, one of the earlier teams that started to look at me. But I actually had a lot more interest from McGill. McGill was one of the top teams looking at me. McMaster, BC was also looking at me. And I had a couple teams out east, too, that were looking at me. Ottawa actually came, I would say, a little bit later. And I think a big part of the reason why they didn't come after me more aggressively in comparison to some of the other teams was because there was a bit of a coaching switch at that moment in time. Coach Piché was, I think, stepping down, and then Coach JP was moving up. And there was a little bit of movement going on. But eventually, one of my coaches, and in fact, it was the coach that got me to play junior ball over in Quebec. He actually ended up getting hired by Ottawa U as one of the coaches. And he helped coerce me into signing with them. So that's kind of the story that actually ended up having me go there. Because I took a year off out of high school in 2009. I wasn't sure where I was going yet. So I figured I'll take a year off, train, work, save some money. And then it just so happened that I ended up sticking at home.
And so talk to me about that first training camp then. You said you weren't prepared after playing ball pretty much up till 2 weeks before training camp started. So talk to me about that when you first started your first camp at the college level.
Yeah, so it was funny because I had never experienced a training camp. You know, we had little like spring camps here and there for OVFL where we would, you know, have a couple practices in March before the season actually started. But no actual training camp. That wasn't really a thing that we experienced. And it was funny because myself and there was other players on the team that were playing for the Cumberland Panthers who actually went to the championship that year that were still playing. They actually left practice, had to go play a game, and then come back. So I had it rough, but they had it even worse because they were still trying to play their season while doing training camp, which is crazy. But it was tough because I didn't know what to expect, right? The concept of off-season training wasn't really something I thought of. I just trained. Like, year-round, I always trained. It was just something I did. But, you know, all these guys that were coming in, especially the veterans, they knew, like, okay, from the end of the season, it's in November or whatever, to the beginning in September, or I should say August when it's training camp, they're training, right? They're preparing their bodies. Whereas I was smashing my body since the previous fall and then throughout the summer. And then I didn't really train for a new season. I was just kind of coming in after playing a season. So it was a bit of a rude awakening. I my body was beaten up. I got hurt a few. I hurt my shoulder. I think it was like the first weekend. So that sucked. But, you know, it went well enough, all things considered. I just decided to redshirt that year. I did have the opportunity to play, but it was a smarter choice for me just to, you know, sit it out, soak it all in. And it was funny because when I did play there, that was the last year they had the grandfather rule. So a lot of the guys that were on that team, there was a few guys that were like, I believe some were like 27, 28, and I was 19. So you kind of think about like the age gap, there was a bit of a difference. And then once that year was over, the gap narrowed a lot more. And I was playing with guys that were more in my age group, not so much against men. So it was beneficial for me to do that.
100%. And what did you end up deciding to take when you were at school?
So my first year I was in art history and art theory, which I did not like. So I got out of that pretty quick, and I ended up studying classical studies. And then I took a minor in ethics, which I ended up later on, I had dropped it because it just wasn't really for me. So I just stuck out with my major. But I enjoyed the history aspect of things. It wasn't something I thought of pursuing per se. Academia was never really my future, I should say. Like, I didn't, because with university, unless you specialize in, especially in the arts, unless you're specializing to get a PhD or if you want to be a teacher, it's not really an avenue that I saw myself taking. But it was something that I could enjoy for the 4 or 5 years that I was going to be there and at least manage and survive. I did well. I enjoyed the course and the program was really great. But I don't plan on doing any masters anytime soon.
That's fair. And I wanted to ask you too about a couple of your current teammates that would have been your teammates in college as well. Were you, was there any overlap between you and Brad between when he finished and you started?
Yeah. So his last year was my first year.
Okay. And so what was he like at that point?
The same, man. He was, even though he was the guy, like the superstar quarterback at the time, he didn't treat me like anything different. He was just a really chill guy, the exact same way. But even when I remember when I first got to Ottawa after being cut from Winnipeg, I remember it was the first day I walked into the building and I was coming through the doors into the players lounge, and we had crossed paths, and he's like, "Oh, ET, man, I'm so happy you're here." Like, it was just really, he's always been a very accommodating guy and just class act.
Gilly said that he threw one of the hardest balls he's ever seen. Can you verify that?
I can, but I haven't caught any of his balls because I was on the other side of the ball. But sure. I remember there was one time he was at, I don't want to say midfield, but he was pretty far back, and they were doing a bit of a competition, and he like pegged the middle of the goalpost, like the center, three times in a row. It was just like unreal. It's just the accuracy, and it was so, like, he was just a great athlete, man. I mean, the fact that he was able to make that transition from quarterback to be one of the greatest Canadian receivers, it's unreal, man. Like, I and as a defensive guy, given that small opportunity in Winnipeg to experience what it's like on the offensive side of things as a fullback, I mean, I have so much more. I always appreciated the offense, but I mean, I have that much more because they have so much more to know. You know, defensive linemen, it's a running joke that, you know, D linemen are stupid. It's not obviously true, but our body of knowledge in comparison to, say, what the offensive linemen need to know or any other offensive players and even other defensive players, it's a lot more condensed. It's a lot smaller. And so for a guy like me to go in and of all things to become a fullback, which is like you need to know protections and routes and et cetera, it's a lot of things. I was like, oh my God, like a deer in the headlights. And so, you know, seeing a guy like Brad who was able to just transition, not just the, you know, physically, but even just mentally, everything, it's incredible to see. And to be able to watch him play in college was awesome.
No, I bet. And I mentioned Gilly there as well. What was it like playing with Gilly? I know he's on the opposite side of the ball as well, but what was it like playing with him?
No, Gilly's my guy, man. I love Gilly. We actually played on Team Ontario together. That's where I first met him. And he was a stud back then, just like he is now. He would like destroy kids on offense. It was so funny. Like, he would give him the ball and he would just run through people and just so shifty, just like unreal athlete. And he's a true student of the game. Like, he really loves that stuff. Like, he's a football guy, like through and through. And I remember, like, nothing's really changed. Like, this guy's come back from so many different, you know, injuries over his career. It's unreal, man. And he's built like a bionic man. Like, the guy is, I don't think I've ever seen him not in shape. That's the funniest thing. It's like, and anyone who knows him will attest to that. Like, he's never not in shape. Like, and he works his ass off for that. It's not like he just shows up and he's in shape. Like, he's on point with everything he does. But it, you know, you see it on the field. Like, he runs down guys on special teams and also any time he's given the ball on offense. Like, he kills it, you know. I have tried, you know, he's not a guy you want to try and arm tackle because he's a really weird run. Like, the way he runs is really weird and he knows it, but, like, it's impossible to try and grab his legs because he, like, will, like, break your arm. Anytime in practice, I try and, like, wrap him up sometimes, and I don't know about you. Like, he's not an easy guy to take down, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. And what about, there was a little bit of crossover between you and Lewis, right?
Yes. Yeah, I knew Lou. I played with Lou. So I played 1 year with Brad, and I believe Gilly and I played at Ottawa U for three seasons. And then I believe it was two seasons with Lou, if I'm not mistaken. So yeah. He was a receiver. He started off as trying to be a receiver and then finally transitioned into a kicker, which I think worked out for him.
Yeah, I'd say so. I didn't know he was a kicker. We had him on the podcast last week, and mm-hmm. he didn't even mention that he was tried to be a receiver early on. That's interesting.
Yeah, I know. That's like a little side note.
Yeah, You mentioned there with Gilly that, like, it was just funny to watch him play because he would just dummy guys.
Oh yeah, he killed people. It was so fun, especially when we were like kids. Like I said, for the East Ontario, when we were on the team there. He won, if I'm not mistaken, he was like the offensive all-star of that tournament. So, yeah, just to give you an idea. And that's out of the whole country at the time. So it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, but I've heard people make a similar comparison to yourself. We're watching you play, and especially in college at the time, it was like a man amongst boys. And that reflected you were named U Sports Lineman of the Year. You were U Sports All-Canadian. Like, talk to me about that, what it meant to receive those honors in college.
Oh, I mean, for me, it was awesome. I it's very, very humbling. And, you know, when I came in, there was a lot of players on the team defensively that I looked up to as, like, these guys are beasts, you know. I didn't feel like I was even going to compare to them. And to be able to, you know, at the end of my career, actually surpass them was, you know, I was very proud of myself, of course, but I felt honored that, you know, my peers looked at me as that good of a player. But I've always just the way I play my style, I think, is what has saved me the most, because I'm obviously not the biggest guy, right? Especially for the position. So my aggressiveness and the fact that I, you know, don't really take plays off is what's helped me get as far as I have. And I'm sure if you talk to any offensive lineman, current or past, they'll tell you that they hate me in a lot of ways, just because if it's practice, I'm still trying to go like it's a game. I mean, I'm not an idiot. I obviously am smart, and I've learned over the years, especially as a pro, that you kind of have to practice a bit smarter. But there's just a way about me that if I ever were to take time or take a play off, I can't get away with it like a guy who's bigger can. You know, I'll pay for it if I don't push as hard, or if I kind of loaf a little bit. It'll show up more on film. So that's kind of why I play the certain way that I play, the certain style. And that's, as any coach will tell you, if you go 100%, it makes up for all the mistakes. Because as simple mentally as, say, defensive line might be in comparison to other guys or other positions in regards to, like, player assignments, everything happens that much faster. And so you need to react and respond quickly, and sometimes, you know, your brain doesn't want to follow through with things. But if you go hard and make up for it in your aggressiveness and your speed, then, you know, that makes things a lot better. But if you mess up, so to speak, and then, you know, are loafing it, then that's when you're going to get in trip.
And, like, where does that come from with you, that motivation to literally never take a play off? Is it, like, just purely out of necessity, or does it come from somewhere else? Because not everyone is built to not take a play off, to be on their game every single play. So, like, where does that come from?
I think for me, a lot of it is, I mean, I've always loved the aggressiveness of obviously playing the sport. I think, though, for me, it was just, I don't think there's any other way of playing it, especially defensive line. Because, like, you're always in contact. There's always, like, whenever I've played defensive end or D tackle, whichever it was that I was playing, you're always in contact at some point. And then for a guy like me who's, you know, been more dominant at his position, especially when I was growing up and younger, I was always engaged with two guys at least. You know, I was double teamed all the time, especially if I was playing on the interior. So I didn't have a choice. Like, if I just took it off, I knew as a smaller guy, I wasn't like, I wouldn't survive. So I needed to be more aggressive. And I was blessed that I have for my size a lot more strength. Like, you know, people would say like, you know, oh, he looks strong, but he's actually stronger than he looks, which, you know, it's, I take that as a, obviously a great compliment because I like to think I look pretty strong, you know, but, but no, for real, in all honesty, though, I think for me, it was just a matter of, I don't like to use the term playing out of fear, but I actually, I was watching John Randall's Football Life a little while ago, and he made a comment because he was a smaller guy playing similar positions, pretty much the same position as me. And he said, you know, I was the small guy out there. So he's like, I was afraid because all these guys are out to get me, the little guy. So, you know, he had to play a certain way in order to avoid, I guess, you know, getting his ass kicked. And I was like, I don't, I can't go soft. In other words, I can't take it off because if I do, the consequences are graver than if I was, you know, 6'2", 6'3", you know, 290 or such, you know.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned too that like if you ask anyone, offensive lineman, past or current, they'll say that they don't like to play against you. And I actually listened to an old interview you did back in 2015. It was before the CFL draft. I think it was with Marshall Ferguson, potentially, if that's... And he said that he needed... Yeah, and he was just saying that like he would always be looking for you on the field to like always had to know where you were on the field because he knew you'd be a problem. And one other thing too, which I was going to ask if you can verify, is probably another reason why guys don't like to play against you. He says you like to talk a lot. Yeah. Is that true? Yeah.
You know what's funny is, well, I do talk a lot, but it's on the football field. I'm not much of a talker, which people would probably find funny. But outside, yeah, very social. I'm a social guy, definitely very social. Talk all the time. I'm always cracking jokes. And I think the other thing too, there's guys that talk a lot more than me, but the problem for me is that my voice carries. So even if I'm not talking a lot, anything I do say, people hear it instantly, which would always get me in trouble as a kid. So that coupled with the fact that I do like to talk, it doesn't always help me out sometimes in certain situations. But on the field, though, I'm pretty quiet. I'll talk some trash here and there, but sometimes it doesn't always go my way because in the heat of the moment, I'm just not thinking clear. I'm just like focused on what I need to do. I find there's other guys that are a lot better at talking trash on the field than myself.
Okay. And I mentioned a little bit earlier, like being named U Sports Lineman of the Year, U Sports All-Canadian. So coming into your draft then, were you expecting to get drafted? I know some guys have been drafted and they didn't expect it. Or like, did you know that someone was going to take you on draft day?
I definitely expected that I would get drafted, but I didn't think that I was going to go that high. Obviously, like I said before, just, you know, if you don't fit the mold, you don't fit the mold. It's just, that's just kind of how things are. And, you know, obviously, I think when I was before the combine, I think I was ranked 20th out of the top 20. Prospects. So I already knew at that point I was kind of on the rim for the teams and the coaches and scouts and whatnot. So after the draft or after the combine, when my stock dropped a bit, that, you know, led me to believe that, okay, well, I'm not going to go first. I'm not like in the first round. I'm not going to go second round, maybe third. I didn't think I would have dropped to fifth. And I definitely didn't think Winnipeg was going to pick me up because out of all the teams I did speak to, they were not one of them. And I don't believe they ever reached out to me personally. So I was definitely shocked. I thought I would get picked up by Ottawa. And the fact that they had the next pick, I was like, you know, crap. Because they probably, you know, talking to them afterwards, like, yeah, we're probably going to take you if you're on the board still. But, you know, everything happens for a reason and it worked out for me. But again, like I think one thing that happened to me actually when we were at the combine, and I know that it definitely hurt my stock was, when we were doing the one-on-ones, there's always the way, I don't know if they still do it like this, but they do one run, block, and then they do the rest is all pass, one-on-ones. So I was actually going against, Sook, Chung, and you know, they blew the whistle, whatever, we collided. And it was a stalemate at the first impact. We both were good. It was fine. But I ended up, see, the thing with O-linemen is they're smart, right? They all switch their cleats. They put the special turf cleats on, and we were all wearing the regular cleats. And it was on the Toronto Varsity's field, which, so it's like playing on ice. And this is how I am, because I'm like very, very, I get like, if I lose, I don't like to lose. So I rewatched like my one-on-ones over and over, and I watched it over and over because he blew me up. Like I got like all the credit to him. Like basically my foot slipped. He kept pushing. I lost my leverage, and he just bulldozed me over. Right. So at that point right there, I'm already fighting against, you know, the fact that I'm too small. And then that happens, right? So that definitely hurt, I think, hurt my stock. And then led them to think, okay, you know what, we'll move him to fullback. So, but you know what, at the end of the day, I was drafted, and I was happy I was drafted. It was a great experience to leave Ottawa for that short period of time. But I think everything happens for a reason. And the fact that I came back and have been able to be successful in Ottawa prove something, right?
Mm-hmm. But so before we talk more about Ottawa, I do want to talk about Winnipeg a little bit. How long were you with the Blue Bombers before you ended up in Ottawa?
Not too much, more than just about a month, maybe just under. Basically all through camp, and then they cut me after the first week of the season.
Okay. So, did you get into, like, did you play preseason or anything at fullback?
I did play I played one preseason game. My camp was pretty, it was rough because as any guy will tell you, any rookie or even just vet, when you first go into camp, you have the rookie camp. So you go in, you start, that's where you're going to get the majority of your reps. And then as soon as the vets show up, you go from, say, getting maybe like 10 or so or more reps a day at practice to like maybe 1 to 2. And as a guy like me who's trying to learn an entirely new position in 3 weeks, never playing it before and at the most, you know, the elite level, it was next to impossible. I did the best I could. And then 2 weeks into training camp, they started to have a lot of injuries on D-line. So I remember one night I was in my dorm, and Coach Osh, he gave me a call and he said, "Hey, ET, we're looking, we need to need to use you at D-line." And he basically said, "How would you feel about getting some reps at D-line tomorrow?" And I was like, "Sign me up." You know what I mean? I'm ready to go. So, and I had, at that point, I wasn't getting that many reps. Like I was getting one, like I said, one, maybe two. Most of my work came in just indie drills and such. And that was about it. So anyways, they put me in and I actually did pretty well. I didn't know what the hell I was doing because I didn't know the defensive playbook at that point. So they just kind of threw me in there, and I did what I had to do. And they let me play the second preseason game, a bit of special teams, and then I did a bit of defense. But I mean, it wasn't a good showing for me. Just I had only really practiced a few days, so it was tough. I didn't think I got, a fair shot at honing my skills and getting myself out there and showing what I could do. Just because of how things were, like I wasn't really getting the reps that every other defensive player got. I had like maybe two or three defensive practices. So, you know, it is what it is. Like I said, I have no hard feelings. It was an experience. The environment was great. The guys I played with there are still, whoever's still left, I still talk with them when I see them. They're great guys. And, it worked out for me that I was able to get back home and play for Ottawa, and they gave me the opportunity. And I also, I owe a lot of my success up until this point to my defensive line coach or former defensive line coach Leroy Blue, because he believed in me and he saw that I had the ability to play the position despite my shortcomings, so to speak. So, I think having a guy like him in my corner, that really helped. Helped to give me that a bit boost I needed to stick it out.
And so how long from when Winnipeg let you go to Ottawa picking you up? Like you weren't staying at home too long before that happened, were you?
No, I got on. So I went in. It was I think it was Monday morning. I went into the stadium and got cut within like the hour that I was there. So got whatever I needed to get together. And I was at the airport, I believe, by 12, called my agent, told him what happened, and he asked, what do I want to do? Because a lot of guys, when they get cut, leaves a pretty sour taste in your mouth. And Some guys say, you know, they don't want to do it anymore. They're kind of screw it, right? They walk away. I said, well, if Ottawa was still interested, because I knew they were, then I'd love to, you know, obviously go there. So he said, oh, I'll see what I can do. So anyhow, I get on the plane and I landed in the evening, and I had him, when I turned my phone back on, he had texted me saying, hey, you got an interview at, I believe it was like 3 o'clock the next day. So I was like, okay, great. So anyhow, I went there, met with them, and I was only out of work for a week. They ended up signing me the following week, and the rest is history.
That's awesome. And so your first year is 2015, correct?
Yes.
So talk to me about that then, because obviously, so you've been to all three Grey Cups in franchise history. Talk to me about the first one. Obviously, it didn't end the way you wanted it to, but even just that experience of your rookie season going all the way to the Grey Cup. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Absolutely. No, I mean, it was awesome. Obviously, yeah, losing sucked, but just the entire experience, I think, like, you know, from being cut to going to the Grey Cup and going to the Grey Cup in the stadium that you know, of the team that you were drafted and cut by, was a kind of like a big F you anyways. You know, I don't like to say I hold grudges, but definitely when it came to that situation, I did, because I didn't feel like I was given a fair enough shot to show what I could do as a defensive lineman. But, you know, it's water under the bridge now. But at that time, I was like, this is great. Whether I was playing in the game or not, I was part of the team. I contributed, and I went on that journey. And to be able to go back there was awesome, man. It was a great experience. And I think if any rookie is able to have that experience, it's the best thing for you, because we're so used to, you know, short seasons, like especially in I call it CIS, but U Sports, you know, it's 8 games, and if you're lucky, you get to the Vanier Cup, which is what 12 or 13 games total by the end of it all. So you still have, you know, 6 or 5 more games after in the CFL after 13. So even if you were one of those fortunate few to make it to the final, it still pales in comparison to the length of a CFL season. And then to go to the Grey Cup, it's even more so, right? So for myself, having played on some pretty sad teams over the course of my U Auto career, and either not making playoffs or getting kicked out of the first round, experiencing that stretch of games, it was good for my mental training, just because of, you know, it's a very long season, and it forces you to really focus on a day-to-day, not looking too far into the future, and to just kind of prepare yourself mentally for the long haul. So I was fortunate that I was able to experience that 2 years in a row even, and then on top of it, obviously, a third time a few years back. So, yeah.
Yeah, but even like to your point, like being able to do it the following year, experience the exact same thing, but have a different outcome of winning. So yeah. I wanted to ask about the playoff run as a whole. Like, how was that leading into Grey Cup? What was the atmosphere like what was it like within the team at that point? Like, you tell me about just kind of that journey heading into Grey Cup.
Yeah. So that year, 2016, was an awesome year, man. Like, it was all cylinders were running, man. Like, we were all. When things finally, like when things clicked and we were rolling, man, like I don't think anyone thought that we weren't going to win, even though we knew we were going against the big bad Calgary. It just, there was something in the air, and we just, you know, we had such a great leader in Henry Burris. We had a lot of other leaders as well, but just having him at the helm, and I mean, that moment when he came out of the stadium running onto the field, you know, just before the game, and, you know, people not knowing if he was going to play or not. I was just like, such a story, you know, I was like a movie moment, you know, so cinematic. And that kind of was our season. Like, we didn't have the greatest season in the world, you know, but we clawed back from a lot of defeats and proved everyone wrong, and we got it done. And it was awesome, man. Like, everyone working together, everyone was team, you know. There was no individuals, and it, you know, ended up working in our favor, and proof's in the pudding.
And do you have any like standout moments? Obviously winning, but any plays or anything that you made that stand out in your memory from that game?
I actually didn't play in that game. That's one thing I wish I did, but I didn't get to play. I played pretty much the entire season, but there were some, you know, roster changes and such that happened in the last few weeks of the season that ended up giving me I got kind of pushed down, bumped down the totem pole. So unfortunately, I didn't get to play in that game.
Fair enough. My bad. Yeah. Probably do a little bit better research next time. I'm sorry about that.
No worries. But I played in the most recent one that we had lost, but I didn't play in
that one. Fair. I wanted to ask, though, about the parade after the Grey Cup. Like, was that like? Every guy's talked about that. It's just an incredible experience, especially for someone like you that grew up in Ottawa, played your whole career in Ottawa. What was it like going down Bank Street as a Grey Cup champion, bringing a pro championship back to Ottawa for the first time in like 40 years?
Man, yeah, that was awesome, bro. It was like just to see all the fans, and it was funny because it was a pretty crappy weather, if I remember correctly. So it wasn't I think we would have had even more people if the weather permitted, but man, the streets were packed nonetheless. And it was cool just because I knew people, some of the people in the crowd, which was even better. Just to, I was able to pick out some family members too, which is really sweet. And just to see the love and support from all the fans, it's the first championship the city's had in 40 years at the time. So, I mean, that was big. That was a big thing. And to be a part of that and to see, the city come around us and celebrate us was just incredible, man. It was a great, great thing.
When did it really set in that you were a Grey Cup champion and you delivered a championship to your city? Like, obviously it's all happening, but when did you really, like, when did it really hit you that, oh man, like, we did that?
I think when we all got our rings at the ceremony, that was like, for me at least, I was like, man, that's, we got it. Like, we did it. This is it. I mean, yeah, when you hoist the trophy and you have the parade, that's, you did it. But I think every guy's playing for that ring, and I think once we all got our rings and they had our numbers on it and everything, that was yours, you're going to have that for life, whether you played in the game or didn't. Like, I know I didn't play in the game, so my name isn't on that trophy because they only put the names of the guys that played on the trophy as well as the staff. But I know what I did that year. I know what I contributed to the success of the team. So for me, getting the ring validated all that work that I put in individually, and I know that every other guy on the team that played and gave any kind of sacrifice to that cause would say the same thing. Like, that's what you're playing for. You're playing for the ring. You're playing for the guys beside you. You're playing for the team. So that's everlasting.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And I wanted to fast forward a little bit to year four. So you missed most of that season due to injury. How hard was it for you to not be playing at that point? I think you played like three games that year. Like, how hard was it for you to just go from playing, like you said, an 18 game season down to three and just kind of having to watch everything from the sidelines?
It sucked, man. It wasn't fun. And it was poor timing too. Cause it's, for me, it was, you never want to get hurt when your contract is ending too, right? Because you want to make sure you're showcasing the best of your abilities in order to kind of help yourself come off season, right? And getting injured was just like, I couldn't help. I couldn't do anything. Like, and the thing too is there's always new guys. Every year there's new faces. So a lot of the rookies that were in were like, who the hell is this guy? Like, who is this guy that's not playing? He's just here. We know he's a vet, but who is he? Like, a lot of them didn't really know what I was about, how good I was. And, the coaches would, do their best from time to time to show old film from previous years where, especially like Coach Blue would be like, we'd be in meetings and they go, here's a play. And then ET would make, I'd make a play. And, so guys were like, oh, okay, we'll see you, ET. We'll see you doing your thing. But like, they didn't know who I was and what I was about. So it's tough because you don't get to have that, you don't get to build that trust and relationship with your teammates when you're injured. That's important. That's crucial when you're trying to win a championship and games in general. So, and unfortunately, a lot of the injuries were out of my control. It happens. It's not something you can control. It just, things happen and you kind of have to deal with it. And it tested me mentally. But thank God I was able to come through at the end. And honestly, like, I wasn't even close to 100% when I did get the green light to come back. I was just, I got to a point where I was like, okay, I'm good enough to play. I can contribute. And I was tired of sitting around. Like, it just, as anyone who's been injured can tell you, like, it's the worst feeling because you're just at practice. You're watching guys work. You're not, you feel like you're just collecting checks, but you're not earning them. You want to earn your money. And so the fact that I was able to come back and then obviously play in the Grey Cup, that was a bonus. and the fact that they, you know, trusted me enough to let me dress for that game, given that I missed so much, was awesome. But obviously, I would have liked to have won it. All hats off to Calgary there. They beat us fair and square. But I will say that that field was atrocious to play on. It didn't help us. And they had to play on it too. They did, 100%. So, but it wasn't I would have liked to have had a little bit of a better footing, so to speak. I'm sure anyone else who played that game would say the same. But you know what? It was a great experience. And you know, if I were to never play in a Grey Cup again, at least I could say that I did, and I know that I've won one as well. So it was a great experience to be able to come back from the lowest lows and to be able to play in the biggest game. It was great.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned too that it's hard mentally sitting on the sidelines, and year five must have been hard mentally, but in a different way. You're playing, you're having a really good season personally, but the team didn't have a successful season. So like, how difficult is that on you mentally to have a 3-15 season?
Yeah, man. You know what? Like, there's a lot of behind the scenes things and all that go on and stuff that not everybody sees. But it's tough, man. Like when especially when you're losing, you know, it reveals a lot of cracks and flaws in people when you're losing. So, you know, the hardest thing it's when everyone's winning, everyone's happy, right? There's, you know, coaches are happy. Management's happy, players are happy, fans are happy, everyone's happy, right? But when you start to lose, that's when, you know, you start to see the true colors of a lot of people. And the worst thing you can do is get on top of each other, right? Like get on each other and be, you know, ruthless and cutthroat. Like you got to stay together, right? And that was what I think, at least for the most part, as a team, we you know, there was moments where guys got, you know, mad at one another. And I know for myself, there was a couple moments where I would get, you know, pissed off at someone, et cetera. But for the most part, we did a really good job of just staying with team and trying to stay together, both as teammates and as a staff. Because it's tough. It's not easy, bro. It's not fun. Losing sucks. In a business where you play to win, it's not fun. Even if you're getting paid, it doesn't matter, you know, because it doesn't feel the same. And the feeling when you go back into the office is just not, it's not cool. It's not a good feeling.
And so like with that in mind, like obviously the record, but what separates a winning team from a losing team?
Oh man, that's tough. I mean, obviously winning separates the teams. No, obviously, you know, the mentality of the team, that's going to be key, but you know, there's a lot of factors that go into it, right? Like what the play calls are on the offensive side of the ball, what the play calls are on the defensive side of the ball, how players are executing their assignments, just overall preparation, you know. I didn't think that we changed our formula much from the years before, but this past year was just kind of a perfect storm of anything that could have gone wrong did go wrong. And talk about, you know, we always talk about, in not just in football, but I think in life, people always say, you know, control what you can control. Don't worry about things that are out of your control because there's nothing you can do about it, right? You know, if it's raining, well, then wear rubber boots and get an umbrella. Don't complain that you can't wear shorts because it's raining and it's not a nice day. Just do what you can to stay dry, so to speak, right? Well, our season, it rained a lot, and there were storms that we had to weather that were out of our control. We didn't have we couldn't control that we lost our offensive coordinator. We couldn't control that we had a lot of injuries. What we could control was the guys that were playing could control how they were going to play on the field. But that's sometimes when too many parts are missing or not functioning well, it doesn't matter. And I think with winning teams, all the cylinders have to be running. And I think if you look at when we won in 2016, we were firing on all cylinders. There was nothing was lagging. When we needed to click, nothing was lagging. We never clicked. But it's the past. You know, there's no sense in beating up a dead horse there. It's the past. We learned from it. I think that, you know, just kind of have to move forward from it and chalk it up as a learning experience and a bad memory.
Fair enough. And I wanted to change gears a little bit here. Can you talk to me about the significance of Rocky Balboa?
Oh, you're Adrian. No, it's, I mean, Rocky, I've always loved that movie. It's just a movie that my dad's, that was one of my dad's favorite movies. So growing up, obviously, watching all of them was kind of a thing. I just, you know, I didn't always watch them, but I mean, they were definitely around more often than probably the typical household. So I always had a love of that movie. And I think just the determination and the grit of like the underdog, you know, overcoming the insurmountable, you know, champion who had all the skill was something that it resonated with me because of just how I am as a player. I don't have all the tools. I don't have all the flash, but I, you know, make up for it in my grittiness and my desire to play. So that's how I kind of related to it. And also just with my dad and whatnot, his love for the movie obviously rubbed off on me. So, and him being my first trainer growing up as a kid, you know, not the boy, he was like my Mickey and I was Rocky. It wasn't like that per se, but just he trained me very hard. And I think, you know, I kind of related to that movie in the sense that I knew I didn't have all the abilities. And so I knew I had to work my ass off to get anything out of this. So that's kind of my relationship to it.
And correct me if I'm wrong, there was a scene in Rocky that was very similar to your parents' first date, right?
Yes. Yeah. So their first date, they went on my mom and dad, and this was before the movie came out. So my parents started dating, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was a month or two before the movie came out. And so my dad and her went to a skating rink, and my dad walked and she skated. And then in the movie, all his friends were like, you gotta watch this movie, man, he's just like you. That's what they were telling him. So I was like, all right, fine, so I'll see it. And then he ended up that scene happened, and it was like, wow. So it's pretty cool for them. And he always had a relationship with that, with the character. He related to it very well, and so obviously it rubbed off on me. And so it's definitely it's a classic film. Get rid of all the other Rockies, just the first one. You're just looking at that as a film individually. It's a great movie. And I think right now, if you look at the current situation and state of the world, it's, you know, that never give up mentality is crucial right now.
No, absolutely. And speaking of parents, you recently became a parent yourself and you named your son after your dad. I want to talk about what being a father has meant to you so far.
A lack of sleep, but no, no, it's honestly, it's been amazing. You know, the only fallback is obviously you don't get as much sleep as you once did, but that's just, you know, that's the trade-off right now. And it's a beautiful thing. He kept us up all night pretty much yesterday. So I'm running on steam right now, but no, it's been an experience, especially I think it's like someone actually had messaged me today and she had made a comment along the lines of, because they had their kid recently as well, and basically said, you know, unfortunately the situation, it does take a bit of the charm out of it because you're not able to share with the family. You can send videos and pictures, but you're not able to go to family outings and bring your child and let your family hold your baby and you know, truly express their love, right? So that's the sad part about it, is we are missing out on some of the earlier moments, but we know we'll get them eventually. But overall, though, it's been amazing, man. I mean, if we're going to be locked up for months on end, I would rather do it with my son and my wife. And it definitely keeps things interesting on a day-to-day basis. And watching him just grow and develop and see his character come out every day a little bit more is awesome, man. It's a great, great experience.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure a lot of your spare time is devoted to family time right now, but like, what are some of your interests outside of football when you have a little bit of time to yourself?
Yeah, no, for sure. So I'm obviously still trying to train. Training is actually just something I'd like to do. Like if I didn't play football, if I were to stop playing football today, I'd always train. Like maybe I would train a bit differently, but nonetheless, I've always been a bit of a meathead. All my buddies will tell you, like, that's just me. I like lifting weights, and, you know, that's just something I've always enjoyed. So that's a hobby of mine, I guess you could say. But no, for me, big gamer, love video games, something I've always done since I was a kid. So obviously I don't play as much as I did prior to my son being born, but I try and get them in here and there, and I try and kind of fit dad time and game time together. You know, I'll feed him, and then when I'll put him on my chest, and I'll try and game while he passes out. So that works too. So gaming is something I like to do in my spare time. I'm a big movie guy. I love movies. I've been trying to get through all the Star Wars recently, just because it's on May the 4th. And then art. I do enjoy art. I'm by no means an accomplished artist, but I've always dabbled in drawing and sketching. So it's something I want to try and pick up a bit more, especially during quarantine. But it seems to be a little bit more difficult than I thought. You think you have a lot more free time, but then the kid comes around, you're like, nope, not anymore.
True, yeah. And one thing I was going to ask you, like, do you ever think about life post-football? Is that a thought for you? Do you try to kind of picture what that looks like, or are you just kind of focused on the current task at hand?
No, I mean, definitely I do. More so now than I did a few years ago, just because I am getting older. I'll be 30 at the end of this year, so I'm not no spring chicken in terms of professional sports. So I've actually been on top of my hobbies and just being a dad and training and whatnot. I'm trying to get through my real estate courses right now. I have one left to complete so that I can actually be registered and start selling. But right now everything's kind of put on hold and postponed until further notice. So that's not happening. But I am definitely looking to the future, because the reality is, like, it's going to come whether you like it or not. And that's just a part of reality. I have to have a plan B. Because, you know, the CFL is a great career, it's a great job, but it's obviously not the NFL where you're making millions and you can, you know, retire rich if you're smart. So you do need to have that plan B in motion. And I think there was a former teammate of mine who played for a long time, not to name names, but he did make a comment one time. He said, if you start to plan for retirement early, you'll retire early. And in a lot of ways, that's true. I think if you are thinking too much of the future and not focusing enough on now, you can probably shorten your career because you might not put as much effort into it. But for myself, it's more so I'm putting in all my effort right now, but I'm not going to put all my eggs in one basket either, because you got to be realistic. So definitely am looking to the future for when that time does come, because I don't want to be caught without in a boat without a paddle.
Very fair. And I think to the point that you made too, where you're not making millions like in the NFL, a lot of people will not realize that you also have jobs in the off season. Like, you're still working in the off season right now?
Yeah. So I do have a job at the beer store. I'm not working a lot. Just obviously with the situation, having a child at home, I can't work as many hours. Just want to be careful with bringing in any risks, especially with the virus and such. So I'm not working as much as I would normally. So thankfully I'm able to get some of the government assistance, which helps. But if the season doesn't happen and there is no compensation for players, then I have other options that I can do for work. You got to do what you got to do, right? Figure it out, because my wife's on mat leave, right? So, you know, that's not as if she's going to be getting the same income as she was prior to having our son. You know, I think everyone's hurting in one way or another. It's just the reality of our current situation around the world. But we're fortunate and we're in a lot better situation than a lot of other people. So I can't complain too much.
That's good. And I was going to ask too, kind of back to football a little bit, was what would your advice be to kids that want to make it to the next level, that want to play pros, even more specifically to you, if it's like a kid similar to you where people say they're undersized, they don't fit that traditional mold of their position, like, what is your advice to those kids?
Well, for me, honestly, what I would say to kids is, if you have the option of playing two seasons of football, play the better season. Don't play in the lesser league. When I grew up, I played a lot of football. I played two, I would, I, for 4 or 5 years straight, I played two seasons back to back. And if I could do it over, I would have, at a certain point, stopped that and just focused on playing in the better league and then had an off-season regimen. Because that's what it's like as a professional, and that's what it's like as a college athlete. You have your season, and then you have your off-season. I think for myself, and I know that a lot of kids, I actually had this conversation with a high school kid. He actually goes to my high school. So I was speaking with him in the gym one time, and he said he played football and played at the high school, and he played varsity as well. And I said, listen, you want my advice? Stop playing high school, train for your off season, and get prepared for the better football, you know, for the, because that's where you're going to get better, right? That's where you're going to produce. And if you can prepare yourself physically for that season, then you'll be more successful against better competition. Then you're just going to put yourself in a better standing with scouts when, you know, you got to show your film. But if you're trying to play two seasons, or you'll break your body down. It's not, you know, everyone thinks they're invincible when they're young, right? But you're not. So that would be my advice, is to train hard, you know, and prepare like you're actually preparing like a professional athlete, you know. Treat it like that, because it's like a job, right? It is a job, even if you're not getting paid. If you're looking at this as a future source of income, you need to prepare starting now as if that's the way it is. You know, I did train really hard growing up as a kid, but I think if I would go back and do it over, I would have done things a bit differently, just to limit the wear and tear on the body and to also get myself in the right mindset going into college. Because like I said, I was playing a season 2 weeks prior to starting my first training camp. You know, if I knew then what I know now, I wouldn't have played that season no matter what. I would have been like, you know what, as much as I would have loved to have played, you know, with my team, my buddies, because a lot of guys I played with that year, it was the last time we ever played with each other. Some of us went on to play other, you know, CIS teams or U Sports teams. Some went to play pro as well, but it was the last time we got to play together. So I don't regret that. But at the same time, if I, you know, look at the big picture, 3-4 years prior to that I had played multiple seasons back to back, if I had just stuck to the more challenging season and prepared for it that way, then I think it would have done me a lot better leading into my college career. Maybe I would have played that year. Maybe wouldn't have been as beaten up. I would have been more prepared physically and mentally to sustain my first year in training camp.
Mm-hmm. And how often do you look back then on that entire journey, being that 12-year-old kid playing football for the first time to where you are today, a professional football player? Like, how often do you reflect on that whole journey?
Man, honestly, I definitely look at it. I don't say I look at it as often as maybe one might think, but I do look back from time to time, just to kind of see how far I've come. You know, because I know that there was a lot of people that doubted me, but there were also a lot of people that were in my corner too. And I don't forget those people that did support me. But it's surreal, because there were a lot of times where I didn't think it was going to happen, that I didn't think I was going to be able to make it. And not because I didn't believe I was going to be able to perform. It was just, you know, I didn't think I'd get that opportunity. And I remember even just my first few years in the CFL, just I was going to work scared, I guess you could say, because I wasn't sure if I'm going to get cut that day. Because once you get cut once, you're always in the back of your head. You're like, okay, when's it going to happen? When's the coach or someone going to come up to you like, hey man, can you come talk to me for a second and come to my office? So when that happened that one time, my first few years, I was kind of just, oh, is it going to happen again? Like, you know, there was always that little voice in the back of my head. But, you know, as I got older and, you know, more experienced and matured as an athlete, I just, you know, I put that away and I just started focusing on what I needed to do to make sure that didn't happen, and tried to cut out that negativity. Because at the end of the day, no matter what happens, I know that I made it. I know that I proved people wrong, and stats aren't everything to me. I don't have the greatest stats. It's not really something I look at. The only stat that I care about is, do my teammates that I played with over the years, what do they have to say about me, right? If it's positive things, if I was a good teammate, if my coaches had positive things to say about me, that to me is what's important. And I think at this point in my career, if I've achieved that. So that's what I look at.
That's awesome, man. But I want to thank you for taking time to be on this podcast. I want to give you the floor. Where can the people find you on social media?
So, I'm not a big social media guy. I do have an Instagram account, though. So that's ET_49. That's pretty much it. I have a Twitter account, but I don't actually use it. It's not, I shouldn't be tweeting anything. Let's just put it that way. I shouldn't. I'll get myself in trouble. So I just avoid that. If you want to follow me, I am on Instagram at ET_49.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you once again for taking time to be on this podcast. And I want to thank everybody for listening. Whether you've listened the entire way through, you only listen to bits and pieces, I really appreciate you taking time to check this out. Everyone, do me a big favor. Go and follow ET on Instagram. I'll make sure it's linked in the show notes down below. Make sure you follow the Red Blacks. We're on Instagram at CFL Red Blacks and Twitter at Red Blacks. Also, if you enjoyed today's podcast, please consider leaving a rating and a review. The more positive ratings and reviews you get, the more helps new people find this show. Thank you once again for listening, everybody. We'll talk soon.